This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. You know that one friend who always finds the best travel deals, picks the right cards, and somehow ends up in first class for the price of coach? I know that guy. Sometimes I've even been that guy. Well, Smart Travel is like that friend, but in podcast form. They cover all things travel finance, like the quick math for knowing when to pay with points or just swipe your card. How to book busy season trips without the busy season sticker shock. Which flight deals are actually deals and which are just clickbait. Hey, times are tight these days, and we don't want to travel dumb. We want to travel smart. Travel smarter and spend less with help from NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Welcome to the Travel Tales podcast. The winners are the people with the most stories.
One of the great things about traveling is the people that you meet.
I've slept in bus stations, I've slept on people's floors.
And it's already on fire, and then there's just a gigantic, huge explosion, like out of a Hollywood movie.
It's not right or wrong, it's just different.
We hired like 10 Chinese prostitutes to come be our audience.
We were kidnapped by nuns in Puerto Rico.
Not a good idea to be high when you're packing. You forget a lot of stuff.
I got swine flu.
By the time you've lived through it, it's just a good story.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Travel Tales podcast. I'm your host, Mike Siegel. Thanks for listening. My guest today is Gavin Solomon. Before I get to Gavin, here's a few announcements. Our website is traveltalespodcast.com. Go there and see photos of the guests, see some stories that I've written, some stories that some of the guests have written. You can see links to their social media. You can see links to our social media. And that is, of course, Travel Tales Podcast on Instagram. Follow us there. Please subscribe. Get those numbers up. Travel Tales Podcast on Instagram. We also have a Facebook page. You can find us there at Travel Tales Podcast. You can subscribe to us on all your streaming devices. That's right. I don't care if you listen to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or iHeartRadio, whatever it is, you can subscribe. And even if you don't subscribe, the least you can do, and if you want to do the least, I'm telling you how to do it, you can give us a good rating because that helps help more people find the show. And it boosts our presence there, and that's a cool thing. If you do that, I would appreciate it. If you think you'd be right for the show, or you know somebody who might be right for the show, or maybe you want to write me and ask me some travel questions, or just tell me I'm awesome, you can write me at traveltalespodcast@gmail.com. That's traveltalespodcast@gmail.com. Okay, Gavin Solomon is a guy I met through my girlfriend Piper, who she met him in line waiting for a TV show in Hollywood back in 2001 or something. Long time. But when we went a few years ago to Australia for the holidays, I got to meet Gavin for the first time, and a good guy. Good bloke, as they say down under. He's a tech guy, works in tech, loves his gadgets. He's a native of Sydney, now spends most of his time living in Canberra, the capital of Australia. A place I've never been, so we talk about that a little bit. He's well-traveled, big motorcyclist, and a mountain bike rider. Maybe he also does street bikes too, but certainly loves his motorcycles and, as he calls, push bikes. So a lot of his traveling focused around that. He's got friends all over the world, so it's a nice thing to be able to travel around the world and see your pals, see your mates. And it's been a few years since I've seen Gavin, so it was good to catch up. And there was a little bit of a delay, as you can imagine, because we're talking to the other side of the world. But through the magic of technology, we got to make this happen. So let's travel a day into the future down under. Here's my chat with Gavin Solomon. Gavin Solomon, thank you for talking to me. What is it like there in the future? What is the future like? Tell me all about it.
The future is bright, and I'm going to have to wear shades, clearly.
So you're down under in Australia, the other side of the world. It is now, it's 2 o'clock here in the afternoon. What time is it there?
It's just after 9 a.m. here, the future, into the future.
All right. Nine in the morning. Okay, good.
9 o'clock in the morning.
Good morning, I should say. Good morning.
And good early afternoon to you too, good sir. And apologies for the sunburn.
Oh, that's okay. I'm not going to use the video for this. So as far as people know, you're deep, dark, Paul Hogan tan. You know, correct. Like you've been working on the Sydney Harbour Bridge for your entire leathery, crocodile Dundee skin.
And you laugh because you know I grew up with his kids. So
I know.
Which is just the most unusual thing ever. But yes, correct.
That's what we'll get into your background because You knew a number of famous people or famous adjacent. You knew the guys in INXS as well, right?
Went to school with the guys from INXS. So, well, okay. I was 10 years younger, and our mutual friend, I can say that because you've spent a whole bunch of time with our mutual friend, was great mates with Michael in particular. Michael
Graham, yes, right. Graham. Yeah, when I was there, I met Graham, and he had great stories about those guys. And apparently some were lovely blokes, and, you know, others maybe not so much. And we won't name names. Maybe some were pricks, as he says. Some were pricks.
Some absolute. Well, I think the actual words were cockheads, but sure, pricks were
cockheads. Yeah, okay, well, I like that too. That, but you know, I do find this people from Australia, much like people from Canada or New Zealand or even the UK, a little bit different parts of the UK. You know, when someone from there makes it and gets world famous, they're very proud. You know, and they, you know, they always mention it's like, you know, so and so's from. Just down the street from me. Yeah. So it's kind of a big deal. Anybody, other than Paul Hogan's kids, anybody, any NXS guys, anybody else famous from your neck of the woods?
Oh, this amazingly. So where I grew up was on the northern beaches of Sydney, and it was, think of it as a close community of a couple of hundred thousand in those days when I was a kid, which is going back, it would seem, many hundreds of decades. And it was just one of those things that everyone kind of knew everyone. So I went to school with Russell Crowe's now ex-wife. Danielle and I went to school together. So, you know, we were very close. And the guys from INXS, I was 10 years younger, so I wasn't so close to them until I was into my early adulthood when we kind of all ended up coming back together again. And as time's gone on, there's been footballers and, you know, guys that Australians would more likely know as opposed to, right. You know, our footballers aren't.
Rugbyers and cricket players. Any cricket players? Exactly. Any big surfers?
All the surfers. So Tom Carroll, Barton Lynch, Damien Hardman, all the guys that I'd grown up surfing with. And again, I grew up 8 kilometres from Manly Beach, so, or call it 5 miles from Manly Beach. So, you know, when there's this many people and there's this many surfers and there's this many surfers that live on the northern beaches of Sydney, you can't help but run into them. So,
yeah, it sounds lovely. And as someone who grew up at that time, to see like a basic American beach, it must seem so crowded to you, you know?
Yeah.
And the waves and stuff.
Yeah, when I first... And I was lucky, and we may or may not talk about it a bit more, but I was lucky I played a bit of tennis when I was a kid growing up, so I managed to travel a little bit and ended up in the tennis program at UCLA for one UCLA semester. And it was amazing, but that was as a 16 or a 17-year-old. I looked out and went, where did all these people come from? I didn't know that this many people existed. So it was a real lot of fun. But
I mean, the LA metro area has about as much people as almost the entire country. That's like half of our state. It's like half of California is your entire country. Yes. Isn't that weird to think of? It's crazy.
Well, I think it is just. Well, think of it in these terms as well. Even nowadays, I think the state of California is 34 million or something, and the whole
It's even more. I think we're pushing 26. 40. Yeah, 26.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah,
and I had the opposite culture shock when I went to Australia for the first time because it's just the lack of people, you know, coming from a country of over 300 million to there, it was just. You know, I'd see these beautiful beaches and coastline. And I went to a place like Byron Bay, which in America would just been overrun. And with, you know, they would turn it into a city and ruined it, probably. And at this time, and this was, you know, mid-90s, but it was still, you know, pretty small and chill and quaint. And, you know, if this was America, the entire coastline of Australia would look like surfer's paradise. You know what I mean? It would just be giant condos, and it looked like Miami Beach. Instead of one little town, it would look all of it. You know, I hope you appreciate it, even though, you know, I mean, like everywhere, I mean, the world population is growing, but I hope you still appreciate the open spaces you still have. And
I've got to say, so where I live at the moment is in Canberra. So I know you know this, but anyone else listening, Canberra's about
the capital,
300 kilometers south of The capital. I live in the capital. I work for a technology company, and we do things for the Australian government. And so being here in the capital, the whole city is 350, or the whole territory is 350,000 people. And it's 350,000 people in somewhere the size of, you'd say, the whole of, it's actually, relatively speaking, and again, it's a relative thing, right? So it's probably, I don't know, 100 kilometres long and 80 kilometres wide. So called 60 kilometres long and 50 yeah. kilometres wide or something to that effect. And I don't know where 350,000 people are scattered down here. But 8 o'clock of the night time is, and I ride motorbikes and mountain bikes and stuff. 8 o'clock of the night time here, place is empty. Place is yours. Give yourself that. You want to ride backwards? In a pair of boardies and a helmet, no t-shirt, fine. No one would see you. So, but those, going back to those coastal towns, there's a real push to keep them, you know, very coastal, very low rise. No, not a lot of, there's a bit of development coming into the suburbs, but they really want to keep them as the beaches and that experience as pristine as possible. So we're seeing that retro push back towards that at the moment, and it's absolutely fantastic. So,
well, hang on to it as long as you can. You know, you can keep those big hotel chains and those developers out of there. I mean, that takes some real political pushback as well, because, you know, the push comes to shove, the money will come in and they'll take it. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think there's enough sense. I think there's enough common sense for the most part. And I say that, I think at times with my tongue very firmly planted in cheek, but I think for the most part, the common sense has prevailed that it's been identified that it's amazing, and don't wreck it. Just don't over industrialize it. Don't change it. They are just amazing places that, you know, you break them once and you break them forever. So,
oh yeah, it's beautiful. And you know, we took a drive when we saw you there a couple of years ago. We took a drive even as far as I think we went as high as Newcastle, maybe a little farther, a little more north outside of city, up north the coast. But it was great, you know, and just, you know, being from LA, we were just enamored with the lack of traffic. You know, that was a big deal for us. Certainly you get some in Sydney, you know, but once you get out of Sydney, it's open, you know, and then there's forests and mountains and they were like, oh, this is lovely. No sprawl of suburbs and things like that yet, but you know, let's hang on to that too, as well as much as we can. Yeah. But it was so funny to talk to the older and longtime locals in Australia. They will say, you know, oh, it's not like it was, but which is what everybody says, but oh, you should have. Yeah. Well, when we were growing up, there was nothing here, you know, there was, so I guess nothing's changes wherever you go. Right. I mean, do you do that? Doing that?
Do you know what? Surprising a little bit, and I'm trying to not be my father in that respect, but it's I do find that again, as I say, it's, and I love progress, and for, again, being a bit of a technology guy, I love forward advancement, forward progress. So I'm probably the antithesis in some respects of that. But there are, I think, in the last 10 or 15 years, I've really kind of noticed me saying, when I was a bit younger, that didn't used to be there. Why the hell is that there now? So there's a bit of that kind of coming into conversation these days. But not so far, not too bad.
We all know Sydney and Melbourne, but Canberra, even though it's the capital, not a big stop on the tourist trail. I mean, you would have to go out of your way to want to go. Try to sell me on Canberra. I mean, try to be its travel agent and give us a reason to go.
Okay, so man-made city. So very heavily designed man-made city. And just for that experience alone, you'd probably want to come and see it, because it is actually something a bit special. The city is full of galleries and also a lot of Australian history. The vast majority of it's actually here. So if you wanted to kind of work out where the Hills Hoist came from, where Men at Work came from, where In Excess came from, definitely worth coming and checking out. And the galleries are truly world-class. So having recently been through, I've been very lucky, I've been through the Guggenheim and I've been through, you know, the Royal Galleries inside of London a couple of times over the years, and I spent a bit of time, as You know, I spent a bit of time in DC for work. That's where our headquarters is. So I have spent quite a lot of time in the air and space museums and the African American museums, et cetera, et cetera. The museums here and the galleries here are truly world class and great. But the really big one to come here and see is the Australian War Memorial. That is a wonderful example of how both America and the full United States of America and Australia have been allies for such a long period of time. And the war history for both countries is absolutely enormous down here. And they've just spent $2 billion on upgrading the gallery. And it's genuinely just for the Australian War Memorial. You come down here for that.
Well, we don't get political. And the mountain biking, yeah. We don't get political on the show, but for our sake, I hope the alliance continues over the next near future. And I can't speak for everyone here, but I think I speak for most. So let's keep that going, shall we?
Agreed.
You mentioned DC and you've been to both. Is it like DC in a way that since it's a government town, is when government is not in session, say the holidays, does the population like shrink by half? I mean, is it just dead?
Not 20 years ago when I first came here, absolutely. Not so much now. It seems like Canberra has become a location of choice for people to come and live as well now, which is great if you love this. It's also known as the Bush Capital. So it sits in a really unique position that if you live in some of these bigger bush communities and bigger bush towns and think of, and just for context, Australia is huge as a country. So when you say country towns, we're not talking 20 minutes away. We're talking you might drive for 5 hours to get to Canberra, which is the next biggest city. So if you're coming in from areas like Parkes or Young or any of those big cities, coming into Canberra is, for those families, for education and for universities and for, you know, it can be quite a big step up. And so because of that, we're now seeing the population here has changed to what it was like 20 years ago. So now when it's sitting weeks and months, you probably increase by maybe 15 or 20%. And then they leave and we wave goodbye to them. And it's like, thank you. We got the city back again. And it's great. But the upside to it is the restaurants, the cafes, the bars, the galleries, the accommodation and the beautiful, and I'm very lucky. I've got a beautiful apartment right on the water here. It has really changed in the last 20 years and changed for the better, I think. So.
Well, you're saying right on the water, but isn't it, it's up in the mountains though, I thought, isn't it?
Yeah. So 800 meters above sea level, but there's a man-made lake here. So Lake Griffin is the man-made lake, and I'm very lucky that I've literally got it just sitting outside my window here. So,
how about a weather difference between Sydney and Melbourne? Is it split right in half? Is it cooler? I mean, which city is closer?
So Sydney's about 280 kilometers away. Melbourne's about 600 south. So
they didn't split it in half. I thought they were trying to split the difference.
No, not quite. So Canberra is hotter than both and much colder than both because of the elevation. So we had last week, Sydney had a 44 degree day. We had a 48 degree day. And surprisingly, Melbourne had a 49 degree day, hottest day in record history. So the history of records. So really, really hot.
Yeah, I was watching the tennis, they kept talking about the heat at the Australian Open. It was brutal. I mean, people were passing out. I mean, they were going to, they had to stop play and everything else and close the roofs.
It didn't look good. So I was actually in Brisbane, which is historically hotter again that week. And Brisbane was, I think, a very pleasant 38 degrees. There's nothing pleasant about 38 degrees, mind you.
No.
We're talking Celsius. So think 38 degrees near enough makes a difference, 100 degrees.
I know enough about that. It's hot. Hot as hell.
Yeah. So,
and Brisbane, you get the humidity.
Yes, you do. So Canberra, dry heat. Yeah, so you get the double whammy. So dry heat here, which is really good, but it gets blisteringly cold here as well. So I think we had a minus 10 degrees C here last year, which is about probably, I don't know, 16 degrees, 17 degrees Fahrenheit, something like that. And that was only 5 months ago. So you do get both edges of it.
What would you say, like, you know, I know you're involved with working with governments and local officials and things like that, but I don't know your job title. So what would you tell people you do? If we're in the, what's your elevator answer if I ask you what you do for a living?
So I'm the account director for a big IT company that provides, excuse me as I'm running out of voice, highly complex IT solutions to government. So I look after three of the bigger government agencies here in Australia, and we provide end user support to them, but we also run all of their data centers and we run their highly complex cyber networks, et cetera.
I know when we met out there, I mean, you had mentioned all these places that you had been, all these different, I know you've seen a lot of the states, you've been, I think, to the UK a number of times and all throughout Europe and things like that. Is it been, how much of this has been business and how much of this has been pleasure?
Into Europe, none of it's been business. It's been all pleasure. Yeah, which has been, I think I may have had one trip that was a little business related, but you know, that was for the tax reasons. The trips, you know all about that because I saw you on stage here in Sydney. And
a little bit
amazing.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. That's so, very nice of.
Yeah, we had a fabulous night that night. It was terrific. So into the US, I come in and out of the US a bit because of work. I would say in the last 5 years working for this company, it's probably been, I'd say my tripping there is 80% of it's been work related. But because of the nature of the company and the way that we work, it's straight in, straight out. It's frowned upon to add weekends and additional weeks to and fro those trips. It's just purely come in, do the thing, turn around, get back out again, get back home. So unfortunately, I don't have the flexibility that I've had in the past to be able to add things to trips. But with that being said, there's some more trips coming up. But I think I've had to the US maybe over the years, maybe 15 trips, I suppose now. It's been
Okay.
Yeah.
Because Piper, my girlfriend, for people, met you. Weren't you guys in line for something in LA here, or like to a TV show or something, right?
We were. It was early 2001. In fact, it was actually my mum's birthday in 2001, 6th of January. And I'd been in LA for a really close mate of mine. I was one of his groomsmen. He married a lovely lady. Unfortunately, they've since gone their own separate ways, but married in Orange County. And I ended up staying in LA for another week and a half or so afterwards. And we'd gone to the recording of Third Rock from the Sun.
And
that was the line. So a friend of Piper's was the episode was Mary Loves Scoochie Part 2, for those that absolutely want to look it up. And so Paul was the king in the actual that particular production, and Paul was Piper's friend. So she was there to see that. I was there with a group of crazy Australians, and we literally stood next to each other in line. That's how we met. So, but we could laugh for 3 hours. The chap she was seeing was an English guy, and excuse me, I apologize. For those that know Australians and English, they are fair game. The English are always fair game for us. So
the Pommies,
yeah. And they, at the time in particular, they were losing in every sport, and the Australians were winning in everything at the time. So it made the ongoing teasing even that much more fun. It was terrific.
So you rubbed his face in the rugby, you rubbed his face in the cricket.
Cricket, tennis, tiddlywinks, football, it was great. Everything. Yeah.
Darts, whether you name it.
Yeah. Pick your favourite English sport and we probably would wipe the floor with them in 2001. It was great. It was all the flavours of fun.
Yeah, you got to jump on those moments when you can, because, you know, a few years later, it might be the other way around. You never know.
Oh, it's been the other way around for the last 20 years, unfortunately. We won't let the details get in the way of a good story.
Yeah, exactly. Did you ever do one of those? Whenever I meet people around the world, there's certain, especially more men, I think, they have this idea when they do come to America, they want to rent some big, stupid, gas-guzzling car and take a road trip somewhere, like drive to Vegas or some kind of, do a Route 66 or some kind of road trip. Did you ever do that? Did you ever do that kind of thing?
No, and I do have an absolute love of cars, and I
yeah, and you're a motorcycle rider as well,
and I'm a motorbike rider as well. So I apologize in advance for not having picked up a Mustang or a Camaro or an old Bel Air
or a Harley or a big Harley Davidson.
So funny you say that, because this year we are planning on doing California, and I need to talk to you off air about this because I am going to rope you into something. I think there's probably six of us, and we're going to ride from LA to Sturgis.
For the rally.
Harleys. For the rally.
Okay.
Yeah. But we're going to use
the rally. That's a hell of a ride.
Yeah, it's about 4,000 kilometers. So, 2,500 miles, 3,000 miles. So, but the whole round trip is going to be about, I think, close to 5,000 kilometers. So, But we're going to do them on BMWs, not on Harley. So there's a bit more to it, but I think there's a big trip coming up this year. So we're looking at, I don't know, probably 3 weeks or, and that's one of the benefits we get working here. We get bigger holidays and longer holidays per annum than you as well.
All right. Well, I know this, and this is always, again, we don't want to be political, but coming back to this, I do Alaska a lot on the ships in the winter, or our summer, your winter, and we would get a lot of Australians. And this year, the Australians and Canadians, numbers way down. They were not coming to America. And I interview a lot of travel experts and some agents on this program, and they're saying, the numbers are noticeable, especially in Vegas. And in hotels around the world, it's into the millions and billions of money lost in this new climate. And so when you're planning this trip to Sturgis and things, did you get a little pushback from any of your friends or going, are you worried about, Australia is probably not a problem, but visas and things is, I don't know the vibe that's happening there. Have you heard from other friends or people going, we're going to skip America this year?
It's a great question, because Graham, our mutual friend, who is also an American citizen, having lived there for over 20 years, he has a very definitive, very hard line on not going back to the US at the moment because of, and I don't think there's any hiding behind the fact that the current administration is proving problematic in a lot of areas. And it is what it is, right? That's just the nature of the beast from time to time, unfortunately.
No, they're seeing it with the World Cup as well. World Cup's ticket sales and flight, everything.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. So I think, and Australians, and again, for those that haven't kind of ever looked at a globe, Australia's a real long way from everywhere. And it's not just anywhere, it's literally everywhere. So our closest, if you were to go to the closest next country from us, which is New Zealand going east from Sydney, it's still 3.5 hours. But if you were to go west, if you continue to go east across the Pacific, over the top of Hawaii into LA, you're looking 14 hours. Near enough makes no difference, call it 14 hours. So wipe out a day, not including the timeline coming back again. So you end up wiping 2 days out. So, okay, fine. For you to get on an aircraft and go to somewhere that's politically not as welcoming as it was maybe 3 or 4 years ago, then that makes – and if you have the question mark of the new ESTA program with getting a visa to come into the US, if you're spending rather a lot of money to go there, why – a lot of Australians are kind of looking at going, well, why would you – risk spending that, firstly, the amount of money that it costs, because it's not cheap, obviously, but then having to go that distance to then get in, potentially go through the gates. So it's easier for us to go west and go up into Asia and then Asia into Europe. So a lot of Australians are choosing to go a slightly different direction and do a more European trip than an American trip at the moment.
Have you considered an alternative? You could fly to Vancouver and ride across Canada and just drop down into Sturgis real quick and just go back up to Canada.
Do you know what?
You know,
yeah. So Graham, our mutual friend, he has just done that. So he was in Canada only 4 months ago with three of his friends. A very close friend of theirs moved there when he was in his mid-20s, one of the guys they'd gone to school with. Actually, a great mate of John Farris from In Excess. They were very close.
Okay.
So
it all comes back to
In Excess. Dale now lives in. It all comes back to In Excess. So Dale ended up living in, and he's been in Vancouver for a gazillion years now. But so they've just done that, and they've done the Rocky Mountains. But he also rode a bike into Detroit, actually. So,
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Which was a big trip. So did that side. So the long version of a short answer is yes, we have considered it. And it's certainly something that's still under consideration. But I think my love of LA in particular, and obviously coming to see you guys and spending some time with you guys, will probably, and I generally get what I want. So it's a bit like you're being voluntold. I'm voluntelling people what they're doing. So,
okay. I hope I'm here for that. I don't know. Would that be July?
August. Oh, I haven't got it up in front of me. I think we're planning about the 20th of August. I think the rally's in September. Oh.
Yeah. I just told you I'm going to be gone the entire month of August. I just told you.
Yeah, you did. So
yeah, okay. Come to Europe then.
Do you know what? That's probably not a bad idea either. If we get any pushback, it will be we do have a secondary plan for Europe as well. So from Germany to Germany. And I think we were talking 20 countries on bikes over 20 days. Yeah. So we genuinely do have a secondary plan as well.
Well, other than those two rides, you know, Europe or the US, do you have any other dream motorcycle rides that you would love to do somewhere in the world?
Yeah, I do actually. There's a few. So I'd love to do the Middle East, the deserts in the Middle East on a bike. And that would always be logistically very difficult, and it's also hard on the body. So I'm going to have to do a lot more push-ups. that would definitely be one of the higher priority ones. But the one in particular that we're planning, it's probably a couple of years away. And generally, our holidays aren't every second holiday is for me at least is a very adventure heavy kind of a holiday. But it's doing the fjords and doing those far northern European countries. So I've got a really good mate who lives in Norway, who's an Australian guy that moved there. He's Norwegian, came to Australia, did his schooling in Sydney with us, and then he ended up going back after uni back to Oslo, and his family live just outside of Oslo. So doing Norway and then across to Sweden and then back across to Finland. I was there a couple of years ago. Finland, by the way, just wow. What an incredible country. So, and Estonia. We ended up on the ferry and across to Estonia.
Oh, I did that one.
How good is Tallinn? Oh, Tallinn's
there. Yeah, it's beautiful.
Oh, it is. Fort City, absolutely fantastic. And I didn't know, the birth of Skype. Skype came from Tallinn.
Is that where it is? I didn't know that.
So,
okay.
I didn't know either. I rolled in.
To a tech nerd, that's perfect.
Oh, absolutely. Be still my beating heart. So
Did you go in a sauna? Did you take a sauna there in Finland?
We did a few, actually. So yeah. I was there for the Ironman World Championships. A friend of mine's son, I'd said, if you qualify, I will be your mechanic. I'll be your bike mechanic. And he's a little bastard, bloody qualified. So it cost me a fortune to go up there and spin wheels and spin spanners on his push bike for one race. So although I did follow him into Nice about 3 weeks later, and so it was a half in Lahti, which was about an hour north of Helsinki, and then we went to 3 weeks later we were in more mainland Europe and went back to Nice, and he had to then.
Well, that's lovely.
Yeah, except for those that are into Ironman, just have a look at Nice and where it's nestled, because you may remember a little semi-autonomous state a little bit further north called Monaco. It's only 10 or 12 miles north. Monaco's at the bottom of a cliff. And the cliff goes straight up And I've ridden it on pushbikes over the years, and it's called the Madone. And the Madone, they race that. They did 190 kilometres or 180 kilometres of racing up and down that mountain on bikes that are not meant to go climbing. Awful, awful down bike. So, but that's what happens when you're 27 and stupid. It's great.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, those days, hopefully we've gotten some knowledge in our old age.
Yeah, you'd say that. I still ride mountain bikes. Crazy.
Yeah, right. Well, talk about, have you ever been somewhere, and whether on a bike or off a bike, say you're in a foreign land, ever got injured yourself somewhere and have been in a foreign hospital? Ever been anything like that? Food poisoning, anything?
So not food poisoning. Yes, in 2018, I was lucky enough to qualify for the Red Bull Crakeworks Enduro World Series, which is a big race in Whistler, and my mate came off his bike and he broke his leg. I fractured a pinky, he broke his leg. So it was not, thank God for travel insurance, but not ideal. I've got to say, the hospital system in Vancouver was, so I drove him back to Vancouver, strapped him up and into a hospital in Vancouver. Absolutely fantastic. Really great. But that week, and I would highly recommend to anyone going to, if you're into mountain biking in particular, try Whistler for the Crankworx World Series. I've never seen, when we walked into the village day one, I've never seen so many broken arms and legs. Everyone's got a broken arm and a leg. It's the fashion accessory of the event.
You're not selling this well. You're not selling it well. You'd love it. All the broken legs.
Don't let details get in the way of a perfectly good event.
Have a good story. Yeah.
Yeah. It was terrific. But no, I've been, apart from just, dislocated pinky, I've been really lucky that I haven't experienced being in a foreign land, in a foreign hospital. So the company that I work for, because we do support the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade, who are the government department here that looks after Australians that are travelling if they get into a little bit of trouble in some of the other countries. Some of the war stories you hear from some of the staff about, people doing not so smart things in other countries have been pretty full on. So it's like, okay, take a deep breath, learn a lesson, don't do anything too silly. So how about you?
Well, I've been to, Bali and Thailand. And so, the Aussies have a bit of a rep. It's particularly in Bali and some certain, in Bangkok and Phuket and places like that.
Yep. Yeah, coast.
Is that for those? Is that for a lot of people? I try to describe it to because like you were saying, Australia is so remote and far. The quickest trip you can do, you hop on a quick flight to Bali, and you're there. But it doesn't bring the quicker the trip. No matter if you're in the UK or the US, it's like us going to the Bahamas or something.
Yeah.
It doesn't bring out, let's say, the more worldly travelers.
I think the word you're searching for is bogans. Bogans, yeah. Bogan Aussies.
Rednecks, as we call them. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
It's not the cream of the crop always, let's just say. They're not into the culture.
No. Yeah. We are scraping the bottom of our cultural barrel with our bogans at times.
Was that as a young man, was that one of your first trips? Did you and your mates just say, we're going to Bali?
Yeah, different when we did it. And I was only 18 or 17 and a half when I did my first trip. My first and only trip to Bali. So, but we went there to go surfing, not to go there and just drink.
Yeah, that's the other reason to go. Sure.
It is. Yeah. So we didn't quite have that experience, but pretty much everyone else I know that has been, that is exactly the experience that they've gone for. So no, we don't shine brightly on the world cultural scale it for trips to Bali. Although I think that's also changing a bit because the rules in Indonesia, the laws in Indonesia have really tightened up over the last couple of years. So I think a lot of the travel agents getting into, groups of young 18-year-old males that are there, and drinking has been known as a bit of a pastime for Aussies as well. We do tend to lead.
No. No. What? I've never.
God, had you not heard of that before?
Beer? Beer? Aussie? Yeah. No. Yeah. Come on.
We grow it on trees here. Cups and cans. So there is a bit of that. So that I think it's migrating, and I think it's going back to the Gold Coast up here. And I know you've been to the Gold Coast, which is pretty feral at times during, you know, November through
feral.
End of that's. It is. I think that's the best word. Think feral cats. That's the general population of 17.5 to 19-year-old Australian males on tour. So,
well, I've never been off the East Coast, really.
Right.
So I wanted to. I mean, the first time I went there, I did the whole backpacking. I did the Greyhound bus from Melbourne all the way up to Cairns, you know, up the coast. And that was it was about 5 weeks, I think it was there. But I wanted to go.
And you didn't ring me for that trip. Sheesh.
Yeah, this was 1996, I think it was. And, but it was the heat. It was the middle of the summer. I would say it was like January, February. And it was hot. And I would tell people, because I really wanted to see something else. I wanted to go to Alice Springs. And the locals said, you're mad to go out there. It's the middle of the country. Do you know how hot it is there? And I was talking about taking a bus because I couldn't afford to fly. And they said, it's like 20 hours in the middle of the desert. You're crazy. And they talked me out of it, and rightfully so. But, I mean, it's worth seeing, though, in the right time of year, though. I've never been inland. I've never been to the middle of Australia. And I haven't been to Perth, which I'd like to see.
Perth. So the short answer is, and to anyone listening, just come here and experience the country, because it is an incredible country in its own right. And it doesn't really matter whether it be East or West Coast.
But don't try to do it all. Like, you know, you have to pick a side. Like America, you can't just do the whole country in 2 weeks. Don't even try.
So for context, Australia is as big and as wide as the whole of the United States.
Yes.
It's a really, really big country. So you're absolutely right.
You wouldn't sit around and go, we'll go to New York, and then we'll go to D.C., and then we're just going to zip on over to San Diego. And it's like, no.
Exactly.
you have to pick a region. We're going to get in the car and drive. It's like, no, you can't do that in 2 weeks.
Yeah. So I've got a story about, if you're interested, about a friend of mine that's just ridden a push bike to raise funds for men's health, and in particular testicular cancer, which he suffered. He's a world-class athlete, and he's just ridden from Perth to Sydney just last month. And he's raised $100,000 or something like that for research into it. I can tell you the details offline if you want, and you can go for it, or online. I'm happy to share. But he was doing, I think, riding about 500 kilometers a day on a push bike, and it took the better part of 9 days he was trying to break the world record to get here as well. Amazing. But middle of summer, and he got absolutely smashed by weather, and not hot weather this time. He got inclement cold weather, and he got inclement headwinds literally any way he faced. So the country has this real, it's got a real bad habit of throwing the worst at you at the worst possible time as well. And when it's bad, it's real bad. So it's just, I suppose, the nature of being where we are as well. But the Perth is an incredible city. It's a long way from Sydney, so it's a 5-hour flight from Sydney. So it is the most isolated city in the world.
Yes, it's far from everything. Absolutely everything.
So beautiful. The West Coast is absolutely it's pristine. It's untouched. It really is genuinely untouched. So 20 kilometers north or south, so call it 15 miles north or south of Perth, and you are literally in untouched country. It's never, no developers, there's no land titles on it. It's the same as what it was 200 million years ago. It is minus a roadway. So there's a roadway now that runs between those towns. But wow, that coastline is just incredible. But it's all the other stuff that goes with it. Couldn't recommend it enough. It's incredible.
So that's high on my list. And then Tasmania, which I have not seen. Yeah, Tassie, which sounds really cool.
Tasmania is, again, I've been lucky enough to have been to most of them. Tasmania, absolutely fantastic. There's a fantastic mountain bike park down there. Just throw it out there. But
the, you and the bikes.
Again with the bikes. That's crazy, isn't it? I should know better. At 55, I really should know better. But the touring, and you really, because of the sort of sheer nature of Tasmania, you really want to be able to do the drive around Tassie as well. So it looks, on a map, looks small. In reality, it's actually, it's probably 10 to 12 days of touring around to see pretty much all of it. So it's a big piece of driving.
And what are the best months to go to Tasmania? I guess it gets cold there, I would assume. So, I mean, I guess the summer would be the best. Maybe now, February?
Yeah, sort of January, February, March would be ideal, as well as kind of leading into summer. Maybe November, beginning of November through into the end of March. But they did have, so the tallest mountain there is Mount Wellington, and they actually had snow on Christmas Day on the top of Mount Wellington, which is a bit odd, but they haven't done that.
Yeah.
They had that for a bunch of years, but they did have snow come through. And so keep in mind that I think Hobart is the city closest to Antarctica, the biggest city closest to Antarctica. So when you look at, you know, when you really start looking at what world geography looks like, it's a long way south as well. But so my suggestion would be pick up a car in Melbourne and put the car on the ferry, because the ferry trip across and then drive around and then come back to Melbourne is the Spirit of Tasmania is fantastic as well.
How long does the ferry take?
It's an overnight. So,
oh, it's an overnight. Okay.
Overnight, yeah. So it's a good couple of hundred k. So it's an hour flight from Melbourne to Launceston or Hobart. So that's the kind of nature.
Hey, if that's for me, tell them I'm busy.
Mike says he's busy. Stop ringing.
So if you take is it better to rent a car in Melbourne than rent it in Tasmania?
Oh, probably not. It's probably easier to do it from, you know, Hobart to Hobart or Launceston to Launceston.
But sure.
I love the experience of jumping on the ferry, doing the ferry trip, overnighting, and you kind of roll off the ferry the next day, and you're in St. Helens, I think, now is where they – so St. Helens is, if you look at Tasmania, it's in the very top northeastern corner of Tasmania, which is not where you'd ordinarily put a ferry, and it means you're not in a major city. You're actually – disembarking in a little country town, but then that's the kind of start of your experience of Tasmania as well. And it is genuinely a brilliant place.
Yeah.
So
yeah, when I got off that ship in Sydney, when I met you over there, I was really hoping, you know, cause some of the other cruises would stop in Tasmania and I was hoping I would get at least a stop there, but it didn't. Mm-hmm. It went straight from Tahiti and New Caledonia. And, you know, I think we went to Guam, maybe. No, we went to Samoa.
Oh, Samoa.
So Samoa on the way back, and then New Caledonia. Oh, well, you know, it's a tropical island. You know what those look like.
That sounds like Norfolk Island. It's great. New Zealand.
Yeah.
Almost tropical island.
Yeah, New Zealand is gorgeous. I've done a cruise from there, and that was very nice too.
See, I'm very curious because you've been to some amazing places that I would love to go and see as well.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, you tend to get around a bit. I mean, do you, other than this U.S. trip or the Sturgis trip, you have, what would be your dream trip, you know, for anything? Have you been to see much of Africa or South America or any of those places?
No, I haven't. I haven't seen any of Africa or South Africa.
Wow.
And I was, which is... Not for any other good reason than I've had two cancellations on it, which we'd planned on going, and for one of the reasons was there was where we were planning on going, there was a coup, so we were highly advised to not go, which fair call. And the second time, unfortunately, we had an illness in the family, and I couldn't. It wasn't the right time to go. So as it turns out, it wasn't such a big deal, but So, however, it's meant that I haven't been to South Africa and then into Africa as well. So high on my list. South America, I've got a great mate who I work with actually, who's Colombian, and he's also part of the motorbike riding group, as it turns out. But his mum has moved back to Colombia, and he said, you know, we should really go back and spend some time if you're interested. So the answer is yes. I would love to go see Colombia. And I've got another mate who's Brazilian, and he again through the association of pushbikes and motorbikes and all that sort of stuff. And he's just come back. He's had 3 months in Brazil seeing family over Christmas, and I caught up with him for a coffee Saturday week ago, and he showed me the photo. You know, he's 20,000 photos of what they've done, and he's a really adventurous kind of guy, and they've gone trekking and all sorts of stuff. So I'm so very high. The other is I haven't been to Machu Picchu, and Machu Picchu is really so Peru and then into Machu Picchu, and I would love to do that. So they're very high. So really, South America is really high on my list of going back to. The other one is by my long-term ex is Turkish. So So I've spent a lot of time over the years. I think I've had 17 trips to Turkey over the last sort of 25 years, and it's one of those countries that feels like home. Istanbul in particular, I love the chaos of Istanbul. It's just outrageous, and I do speak, having been together for so long, I do speak a little bit of Turkish. So I have enough to get myself into a cubic shit ton of trouble. Just enough to be able to get a flight back home. So it's right. You know, somewhere in the middle is all the goodness. But there's because I do speak a little bit of Turkish, and when I say a little bit, I mean like a little bit. It really does change your experience as well. So you really and my experience has been you get treated very differently as well, especially when you're trying to stumble over.
Oh, sure.
Turkish is an incredibly difficult language as well. So yeah. Yeah. So I say to Z, my ex, who I'm still really close to, I say, right, I'm going back to Istanbul. Right, have you got, you know, booked these things? And we're very lucky we bought a little apartment there and as well over time. And it's like, have you got all these things? Yes, I do. Right, let's check your language. No, thanks. We're going to check your language. We just need to make sure the pronunciation's right. So it's terrific. But as I say, you do get treated very differently, and they love Australians. So we have a warm history with them as well.
Well, I was going to tell you one of my Istanbul stories. I went to a local, when I was there, I was staying in the city, and they had all these travel agencies and stuff around selling tours of, you know, Cappadocia and things like that. And I walked into one of them, and it was a young guy, probably in his 20s, and really strong Australian accent. And I said, oh, did you live in Australia for a while? Did you study there or something? And he said, no, I've never been. I said, really? What it was, you know, he had learned English, but because there were so many Aussie tourists that would come through, he just picked up their accent from them. You know, a lot of them go to see Gallipoli.
Yeah.
And they would sell those tours. And he picked up their accent. But it's just jarring. Usually, if it's not an American accent they learn from TV, or it's usually a British accent or something. But nope. And g'day, mate. What? Who? Who's this guy? Yeah. And he was Turkish all the way. And it was just that part was funny. And the other thing I noticed, all these middle-aged men walking around with bloody bandages on their heads. And I thought, was there some big street fight or something, or a riot, or what happened? And then I find out later it's the number one place for hair transplants in the world.
Yeah. And teeth.
And teeth, yeah. All cosmetic surgery and everything.
Yep. Turkey teeth. Got to love a set of turkey teeth. I don't have a pair yet. But this time.
Well, I mean, you and me, we could go there, we'd get sold. You know, the salesman will come at us hard. They see a guy of a certain age, you know, coming into town.
Absolutely. That's the joy of knowing a little bit of Turkish.
Okay.
Yeah. They stop immediately when you start a conversation with Merhaba, das ist nez. They kind of stop and it's like, oh, what? You know Turkish?
Yeah.
Czech. Not Ingilizce.
Okay.
So they do change that. I'm very lucky, as I say, the words and the little phrases that I know, just enough to get me into all the trouble. It's
all great. Sorts of trouble.
Yeah.
Okay. But well, that being said, go ahead.
I was going to say, I had a funny experience, I think 2017, when I was in Istanbul. I had about a couple of days to myself before Z was coming down to meet me. And I thought, do you know what? I really would like to go out of the Bosphorus into the Black Sea and up into the Ukraine, up to Odessa. So I jumped on a ferry. It's an overnight thing. And I got two-thirds of the way up the Black Sea and went, crap, I've left my passport in the hotel safe.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh.
So I get into Odessa. I approach the counter with a young guy. I picked the youngest guy I could see. I walked up to him and I said, look, I'm in my most Australian accent. I said, I'm really sorry. I've left my passport in the hotel in Istanbul. And he's gone, are you Australian? In perfect Australian. And perfect Australia is, you know, Kiwi collar. G'day, mate. How are you?
Right.
And I looked at him and I could have fallen over. And I looked and went, I am. And he said, tell me the story. So I told him, he goes, whereabouts are you from? And I said, oh, originally from Sydney, but I live in Canberra. He goes, I lived in Sydney for 10 years. I said, what? He laughed. He said, yeah, I lived at Manly for 10 years. where you were staying, he lived in the street
Manly
behind.
Beach, yes.
Yeah, he was staying literally in the street behind where I'd picked you up. So, and he lived there for 10 years. So we laughed our heads off. He said, I can't let you in. He said, but if you sit there, we'll get you onto the next ferry back to Istanbul. I went, that sounds like a great idea. Happy with that as a result.
Wow. So, how long does that ferry take?
Another day.
Oh.
So another 24 hours. So it was, or thereabouts. So I said, okay, that's fine. We organized it. And I had a return trip anyway. I was only up there for 2 days. So so I didn't get to see Odessa. So
shoot.
It is.
That's been, yeah.
Yeah, not the place you can go now. So,
oh yeah, Odessa's been was on my list because that's where my grandfather caught the ship to America. Was from Odessa, kidding? Yeah, and they still have his. We found the ticket, the steamship ticket from 1912. No. Yeah, so I always wanted to see that port, and I don't know, I don't know the full. I know they definitely came from there on the way over. That's where they left from. But I don't know if how long they lived there or that's just where they escaped from. You know, they were chased out of all those countries, but, you know, but they definitely left from Odessa, as a lot of people did.
Yeah. So had he come from Germany originally or from?
Russians and, you know, you know, whatever. It was all considered Russia at that time. Yeah. But yeah, Poland and Poland and Russia for the most part.
Yeah.
And that's Odessa was where they caught the ship.
Wow.
To America.
When I hope the conflict in that region clears up incredibly soon and they start rebuilding, because Odessa has been, unfortunately, very heavily engaged for mm-hmm. the last couple of years. So apparently it's not great there at the moment, apparently, I've been told. But if and when, count me in, I'll definitely come up to Odessa with you. I'd love to see it.
Yeah. And there's a lot of that region, Eastern Europe, that I haven't been to that has been on my list, in Georgia, Bulgaria, and that area, Albania as well, that I haven't seen. And that's the part of Europe that I really haven't explored much, but that's the word. Yeah. And it's very affordable. That's one of the last affordable places.
Oh, it is.
Remember that when you go see your friend in Norway, the most expensive place to go.
In the world, yeah.
Oh, so jeez.
I was looking at... I was talking to, my friend's name's Trun, and I was talking to him a couple of weeks ago, and I said to him, and he said, oh, we're off for a coffee. I went, how much is a coffee going to cost you? And he went, I don't know. He said, I'm doing it in Krona. It's going to be, for the two of us, probably 30 euro for two coffees. Two coffees and a... You're nuts. So
that's insane.
Crazy. Yeah.
Wow.
So I can give you the Australian version. So... 30 euros would be 55 Aussie, thereabouts, 50 to 55 Aussie, which would be about, what,
10 coffees.
Yes.
10 coffees.
Yeah, the equivalent of 10 coffees here. And the coffee here is great, as you
yeah.
know.
So. Okay, now you brought it up. I'm going to have to bring up the coffee situation in okay. Australia, because I was there in 96 and no one cared about coffee. No one gave a damn about it. Then I go back and I don't care if I work with them on a ship. I don't care if if we're here in the US. I don't care where we are in the world. Every Australian I know is a coffee snob. Every place sucks. They'll go, oh, this is terrible. This is shit. This is horrible. And they got an opinion on the coffee. When and why did Australia become this coffee snobbery place?
So firstly, you're welcome.
you did take me to a good place. I will say that.
I did.
But it took some doing. It took some choice. You rejected after you rejected five places. You said, "Oh no, that place is shit." No,
we're not going there. No, we're not going. Yeah, this one will do. Yeah.
So yeah, exactly.
I don't. Well, I can tell you the reason. It's because we as a country we're highly multicultural because we are literally in. Sorry, I've got a workmate saying I accidentally called you. So yeah, which was the call for you, as it turns out.
Yeah.
So because of the nature of Australia, we relied to get our population to where we are, we've relied on immigration. It's been the big thing because we are literally in the middle of nowhere.
Only for the last 50 years, though. You know, was it 73, you know, first time it opened up?
No, a bit before that because – so in the 40s was really the first big – 30s and 40s was the first big –
Yes, but you didn't know – but non-whites were not allowed in until like the 70s.
Oh no. We had huge population and immigration from Poland, Italy, Greece. That's how we've managed.
No, I know that, but non-whites were not. I mean, up until this is why I've learned, and you can correct me my history if I'm wrong. Up until the 40s,
yep.
It was only from the UK or Ireland, English speaking. From UK or Ireland, usually.
So anywhere in the Commonwealth.
Yeah, so or Canada, or you know, we could say.
Yeah.
But after the war, we're like, hey, look, we fought alongside these guys, and then we need, and that's when in the 40s, you found that huge immigration from Greece and Croatia, in the former Yugoslavia and all that.
Yep.
But still, they had to be white, I believe.
No, I wasn't.
I learn that wrong? Because I thought it was like 73 before they only opened it up. And in the 70s when the wave of like Chinese and Asians came in. The main big wave.
That was
learn that?
Yeah, so slightly off. So 19 back to Constitution, which was first of the first 1901, the immigration policy here was within the Commonwealth, and within the Commonwealth meant Africa as well. So if, for example,
South Africans.
It didn't delineate between South Africa or Africa because it was still deemed Commonwealth. So you might have been from Zimbabwe or you might have been from Cape Town, for example. So there wasn't delineation there. But in the 40s, they really opened it up because we needed to, as the industrial revolution spun up, so we needed skilled migration, which we didn't have here in Australia at the time. So that was kind of wave one. And then wave two was very much around the Asian basin because we didn't have that collegiate, and given where we are in the Asian region, we didn't have that collegiate immigration policy between, you know, Indonesia, China, Japan, Singapore, Hong Kong, et cetera, et cetera. Hong Kong also at that point in time being in the Commonwealth. So that was kind of it wasn't the delineation wasn't via color, it was more via region, and then that industrialized immigration because of the nature of what the country was trying to be at the time. So I don't think we've ever as a country, and again, there's a lot of history with our Aboriginal communities here that's still ongoing, but I don't think there's been ever a point in time where they've where they've said, no, we're going to delineate this type of people's coming in because of the nature of ethnicity or colour or race or religion. We've always been a very open country. We have issues with, we're starting to have some cultural issues around the religious piece at the moment. And unfortunately what's happened in Bondi just before Christmas, which was just tragic.
Crazy.
Tragic. Yeah. Given we were there, we were at the other end of the beach having dinner.
You were?
Well, so I wasn't there that night, but you, Piper, Graham and I, we were at the other end in Icebergs having dinner.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's only 400 meters away from where it happened.
I walked the whole beach on my own the next day. I hiked from there to what was the point I walked to? I did it on my own. It takes about an hour and back.
Bondi to Bronte walk?
Yeah, I did that one.
Cliff walk down to the beach and then back again. Yeah, Bondi to Bronte.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, that was That's great. Right.
That was, yeah, brilliant, brilliant day. It's and a great walk. But, you know, so that's, you know, we're starting to, unfortunately, the country which, and we've been so outside of the bubble of, you know, religious wars over time, unfortunately we're now getting into a position where it's becoming, you know, mainstream, and it's, you know, it's awful, it really is, that we're in it. But it's also changing the nature of Australia. It has changed the nature of Australia as a country, because 99.99998% of Australians would kind of go, well, that's not representative of us, and we're a safe country, and doing dumb shit like that. Like, that is just ridiculous that it's happened. And there's a real big push to really change that stance in our culture as well at the moment, which is great.
Well, now you put on your Paul Hogan ambassador hat, and we all know the hot spots, but tell us where a hidden gem that maybe people should see and you want to give some love to, and what should people, other than the big highlights that we all know, if people are going to come to visit, where can you tell them? It's like, hey, I know you heard about that, but check this place out.
Yeah, there are so many. I would always say, and I know we've had this discussion, you and I were over a coffee one day. Wherever I go, I always put my position is I want to go and see all the big things, great, big tick. But I also want to live like a 40-year-old Australian or a 30-year-old Australian as well. Take me and be a 30-year-old Australian. So don't just go and do those big highlight things. So one of the things for me would be I would definitely do. Sorry, my machine is just running out of battery.
Plug it in. Yeah.
Yep, you're all plugged back in. So a couple of things I would say: go and do the northern beaches of Sydney. Don't get off the beaten, get off the tourist track. So from Manly, go north and go and drive through the villages all the way up to Avalon and up to Palm Beach. For those that have seen the Australian drama of Home and Away, Home and Away is, I know you're laughing because I know you know it. Home and Away is Palm Beach. It's a brilliant drive. It's a 30-kilometer drive up the northern beaches of Sydney. It's unreal. Adelaide, I've recently done Adelaide again, and it's the first time that I've been to Adelaide in probably 25 years. And I drove the Great Ocean Road from Adelaide down to Lawn and then back up into Melbourne only 18 months ago. Oh my God, that drive is just fantastic. But the 12 Apostles, wow, and I'd never done it before. I can't believe I'd gotten to 54 and had never driven the Great Ocean Road. Holy crap on a cracker. It was absolutely fantastic. But the best part for me was not only the drive was amazing, but staying in these are proper Aussie country towns, and they are untouched. There's no development in there. The pubs are fantastic. The war stories from the locals, absolutely first class. They are just unreal. So that whole experience was just terrific. It really was. So couldn't recommend that enough. Absolutely terrific. For those that go to the West Coast, Margaret River, amazing, which is about 3 hours south of Perth. do the drive from Perth down to Margaret River. It is stunning. And go for a swim. Just jump in the Indian Ocean. It will. The Pacific is one thing. The Indian is something entirely different. And the sheer fish life and marine life in the Indian is, because there is nothing on the – there's nothing else there. And it's untouched coastline, which means there is literally – it is just fantastic. So there you go, my tips.
That's great. And speaking of the reef, the ocean, how's our reef doing?
So I was in Hamilton Island for my mum's 80th birthday, actually, 2 weeks ago, and we ended up on the outer reef, so we did motor up. It's one of the seven wonders of the world, no question. It is stunning. It truly is. So we were there on the only good day that we had up on Hamilton, and it was ended up being a 35-degree day and crystal clear. It was like looking through a bottle of water. It was so clear and so crisp. But we had about 20 minutes of cloud over the top of the reef, and every speck of color was there. It was incredible. Fish life that I've never seen so many fish. And I've been going up to the reef for, you know, the better part of 30 years. I've never seen it so healthy. It was
truly
beautiful. Yeah, never seen so many sharks out there actually as well, which was
that is good to hear. I mean, as long as they don't, you know, what kind of sharks? That's the tough one. But
they tend to be the little guys. So
okay, yeah. Hey, what? Wait a minute. You didn't answer the coffee question. So you're saying immigration? That's how you became pretentious pricks with coffee. Yes, that's correct. The reason you're blaming immigration. For being giant pains in the arses.
Okay. Yeah. So up until exactly. Yeah, and to be fair, we are when it comes to coffee. So that was really it was the Italian and the Polish and the Greeks. The Greek communities as they've come together, they've really given us that taste of.
And the Turks.
So I think we're the biggest from an – yeah, the Turks do a bit differently as well.
They drink that thick it's a very kind of – I don't like Turkish coffee.
Yeah. I find it very
like tar
to palate. My
yeah.
Quite sensitive little tongue and my – yeah, I'm a bit – yeah. Z's made me drink it over the years, but it's like, oh, God, that's harsh.
So, yeah, that's a rough one.
It is, yeah. But that's because of our wonderful Italian and Croat and Greek and our very European multiculturalism. The coffee here has, especially in the last 20 years, has gone just through the roof. So I know you and I have kind of waxed lyrical about this because I actually have a very good mate of mine who was the 2015 World Barista Champion. And he's currently in Ethiopia. So they've bought some farms around the world. He's currently in Ethiopia cherry picking at the moment. They've gone there to pick the next batch of cherries for the next competition of coffee. So that's the snobberism and my
yes and how much is your coffee machine? Just give me a number. You can even lie, but I mean how much? I'm gonna get a heart attack on this.
So that one sitting there is about $11,000 Australian, and the grinder sitting next to it is about $4,000.
You bastard!
I have a problem.
Oh my god!
In fact, I have a problem.
Oh god!
I don't Jesus. See an issue. As it turns out,
worth more than my car. Worth more than my car. Yes. And you're drinking it out of a
Cookie Monster
mug. Yeah. Okay. Great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, we got to wrap this up.
Dark Lord.
It could be, yeah. So what do you think all this, you know, you've been lucky to see a lot of the world. What do you think it has taught you and what do you, about people and yourself and the world? I mean, what have you learned from what you've seen?
That's a brilliant question. I've worked out how small a speck I am in the greater scheme of things. You kind of think, I think day to day you tend to consider yourself, you know, a big fish in a small pond. But when you start traveling, you really work out that the world is a massive place. But I think the big one for me was, and I know we've sat and talked. I've been very lucky. I've had you as a mate for a bunch of years, and we've sat and talked about travel and about experiences. And for me, that's always been my thing, is to you know, stop, take a deep breath and be a sponge and really understand culture and the experience of where people have come from. And for me, that's always been that's kind of always been the thing for me traveling, is to really understand more about how wherever I am has come to wherever they are currently, and try and catch up as quickly as I can. I was very lucky to go to Greece 2 years ago, and never been high on my bucket list, but I was I had an opportunity to go there. I was in Italy, and it was a quick, you know, relatively speaking, a quick trip. And I thought, I'll have a couple of days in Athens. Wrong answer. A couple of days is not enough. And I literally spent 2 days reading and catching up on, you know, the history of how Athens became Athens, and after being through the museum and walking through the Acropolis. Oh my God. And that, I think representatively for me, that was how I was with Istanbul 20 years ago when I got there. It was like, Australia's 220 years old. Constantinople has been around for 9,000 years. I've got 8,000, you know, 8,000 years of catch up just to get to current day Istanbul. You know, I'm so far behind the eight ball. So for me, it's about, you know, learning more and experiencing the knowledge and reading the funny stories and going and finding the funny things as much as doing the big, you know, the big you must sees, but then kind of living a day or a couple of days in the life of a 30-year-old, you know, Turk, or a 30-year-old Greek, or a 30-year-old Italian. And luckily for me, I've had, you know, you and Pipe over the years to be able to live like a 30-year-old American in California. It's very different to seeing Disney and seeing Redondo. It's the other stuff that you. So yeah, that would be that.
Sure,
the big thing for me is, you know, some history first, or history on the fly.
That's great.
Travel is a wonderful, wonderful experience. Recommend it to everyone.
Perfect.
Just take the trip. Book it and just take it. You'll never have a bad experience. And if you do, it's just another experience, right?
Yeah, that's great. I appreciate you doing this. I know it took up a bunch of your time. You're a busy man. You're starting your day. So we're going to wrap this up. Is there anything you want to plug before? Do you have an Instagram page, or can people follow you anywhere on travels? And
sure. On Instagram, Gav_solo. If anyone would like to connect, by all means. But that's pretty much it. I'm lucky that, you know, we've talked a bunch over the years, and it's go and travel, you know, you work to live, not live to work. Go do it in that order. Go and just work to live. It's a great thing. It really is. And the world is a big place.
Thank you so much, Gavin Solomon, everyone. Thanks.
Travel doesn't always go to plan, and that's where the best stories live. Welcome to the Winging It Travel Podcast, where you don't just hear about travel, you feel it. I'm James Hammond, and I'm podcasting my own journeys from the road, sharing immersive soundscape episodes that drop you right into the moment, from busy streets to remote mountains. Along the way, I sit down with local people and fellow travelers to tell honest stories about life, culture, and chase an adventure beyond the routine. No filters, no fake perfection, just stories to tell, tips to share, and experiences to inspire. Search Winging It Travel Podcast on any podcast app and let's wing it.
Quick question. Do you want travel tips from people who have actually been there?
Our show is co-hosted by Tim Johnson, an award-winning travel journalist who's been to more than 145 countries around the world. And I'm David Brody, the other co-host who's been travel podcasting for 20 years while traveling to 50-plus countries around the world.
In about 10 or 20 minutes per show, we break down a destination with the kind of insight you usually only get from long guidebooks or hours of research.
So if you want expert advice, zero fluff, and travel inspiration that you can actually use, search for Travel and Tin wherever you listen to podcasts, or you can also find us at voyescape.com.